All-In Talk Show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. We have some interesting things to talk about today. We'll meet our first guest in just a few seconds here. We're going to be talking about a big weekend that's coming up in Mars. Later on the program today, we will be chatting with a graduate of Slippery Rock University. Her name is Mariana Miles, and she went to Antarctica. Antarctica. That's a pretty good trip. A little further away than Shikora. So we'll talk about that. She'll be visiting with us a little bit later. But we say hello to our first guest, Mary Elizabeth Snow, who sits across from me here in the studio. Mary Elizabeth, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us today.
Nice to meet you as well.
This is a big weekend in Mars. It's the Mars Exploration Celebration, right?
Yes.
And is there a particular reason why we have it at this time of the year, Mary Elizabeth?
Yes. Every 687 days, the planet Mars travels around the sun. So our town came up with the idea it would be a great celebration to have to bring people together. And not only that, but to promote outside of ourselves and out into the galaxy. If you stop to think a minute how really big the universe is, and it gives you a chance to start there and a good reason to, being named after the planet Mars in the town, we might as well.
So it takes approximately twice as long for Mars to circle around the sun as it does. We have a New Year's once a year. It would be about every 2 years, close to that, every two years.
That is correct. We tweak the actual celebration to work more to fit our summer, but we have a dinner, and the dinner falls right on the actual New Year. The dinner was last month or the month before, I believe, and that promotes it more. It's an exciting time for our town. We have a really good group of people that put together something that brings NASA in, and the amount of educational information they bring to town, hands-on things, opens up your mind to learning in different ways. The first year I attended, they had the rover that went on the moon, and it would drive over top of you. And that makes it fun for kids, but they also have a tent set up that has all the maps of the planet Mars. And it's nice to be hands-on. It's so far away, sometimes we don't actually think of it. Because it's so far away, it's not actually tangible. But in all reality, the moon didn't used to be tangible. And NASA is trying to get us to put people on Mars. So we're working towards that goal in our own small way.
I know the Borough of Mars celebrated this a couple of years ago. Did they do it earlier than that, too, or was a couple of years ago the first big one?
This is our third one. Okay. This is our third one. Actually, the first one, I was a little bit more of a participant in Mars. I'm kind of a helper-outer. Whenever somebody needs something, they give me a call, and I assist. The second one, they needed help with a maker's build. They had brought someone in from California, and she was very intelligent. She had a lot of information about the Viking lander, which was the very first lander to land on the planet Mars. Mm-hmm. And because I own a junkyard, she needed someone that would be open to, hey, I need this odd, weird object. So the committee said, Mary's your girl. And ever since then, I kind of just hit the ground running and took over the build completely.
I can't remember whether it was 2 years ago or whether it would have been the first celebration where officials in Mars contacted NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, and I think there was an astronaut or somebody that came. Somebody from NASA came.
Well, so the very first time, even before we did it, we've always had a New Year celebration, Y2K, but it was Earth's New Year. It was every 365 days like everybody else. Mm-hmm. But because the population of Mars is older and the doers and the movers and the shakers don't always get around as well as they used to, they decided that why would we do something that would take so much energy but not really reap a lot of rewards? So the mayor came up with, well, when is the new year for the planet? And he called JPL. Well, they didn't even know the answer right off bat. They had to think about it. And then they got excited about us doing it. And they've been on board a little bit at a time. And each time it's more and more. We've had several astronauts attend at the dinners. Jim Green comes and he's the lead scientist in charge of the planet Mars, which is, in my opinion, totally amazing.
JPL is Jet Propulsion Laboratory,
yes.
Right?
Yes, sir.
Is Greg Hartung still the mayor in,
yes,
in Mars?
Yes,
so
he
just called the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
He just calls them. Well, that's the way the planet, that's the way the town of Mars works. See, we are a little bit out of this universe, and the people on the committee are definitely movers and shakers. They want to change this world a little bit at a time.
You may not know the answer to this, and I don't know whether I've talked to Greg before. I don't know whether I ever asked him either. Do we know the exact derivation of the name of the borough of Mars? I mean, was it named after the planet, or because that's also a god,
so,
if you go back to mythology, the god Mars?
So as part of, I'm not an official member of the Historical Society, but I have been palling around with them since 96,
yeah.
And I've read a lot of books. There's three different theories.
Ah, okay.
There's a plaque in Mars that says Mars, named after the star of Mars.
Okay.
The first postmaster and marshal, like sheriff of Mars, his name was Marshall. Marshall. So that's like one theory, but that's the most attainable theory, is the Marshall. They just shortened it to Mars, but there's a plaque in town that is from the star of Mars. But Mars's original name was Overbrook. But there was another town on the U.S. Postmaster's drop-off bag pony rider thing that was also Overbrook, so we had to change it. So it was changed to Mars.
It's interesting.
So we like to say officially it's totally named after the planet Mars. That's why NASA should build their Discovery Center in our town.
Well, after all, there is sort of a spaceship, an alien spaceship in Mars, a little replica thing, which I understand has recently been returned. It was out for repairs or something.
It was. It was before the aliens could land. We had to get it all fixed up, and we were really trying to put a polish on downtown Mars, so we wanted to start with the spaceship.
It was repainted or something, I think.
It was completely stripped down over the years, many, many layers. We have some amazing people in our borough that John and Chris Clutter were the Martians of the Year this year. Every 687.
I apologize.
All those numbers in my brain. Every Mars year, we pick a Martian of the Year, and Chris and John Clutter are this year's. But over the last 20 years, they have painted that spaceship themselves countless times to spruce it up for every event. And there are probably, I would venture to say, 70, 80 layers of paint.
Oh, wow.
So it got completely stripped and redone. And we're very blessed to have them and the many people who have painted it over the years.
Well, it's back in place for this week. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about the Makers event with which you're involved. But there are a bunch of other things happening this weekend. And everything's open to the public, right? Down in Mars, I mean, people are welcome to come in. And it's all weekend, is that right?
Yes. We kick it off Friday. And on Friday, there's going to be a tribute band. And I believe Stick City will be open, and there will be 100 drones putting on a light show in the sky over Mars.
Wow.
And you can walk around and see the stuff there'll be a few things set up, and I believe a keynote speaker will also be there from NASA this evening, or Friday evening. Saturday, there will be kid events and vendors and multiple keynote speakers. We have two or three stages that there'll be people talking. There's a robotics demonstration. There is a rocket build, a place where you can build rockets, as well as rocket demonstrations. We'll be doing drone things. I don't know the exact things with the drones, but NASA is bringing a half-scale model of the InSight, which is the last rover that they put, or the last lander that they put on Mars. So they have a scale model of this device that is on the planet Mars that collects information and sends it back to us. And the pictures and the information and the geological concepts that they bring with them are hands-on, questionable, and you can go to them and they can answer any questions you come up with. And that's probably my favorite part, is they're very open. They want children and grown-ups to come up with questions, because the more questions we get, the more answers that we will seek.
The Mars, it's officially called the Mars Exploration Celebration. It runs this weekend, May 31st, June 1st, June 2nd, which is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, as Mary Elizabeth just said. And lots of exhibits and demonstrations by prestigious scientists and astronauts and representatives from NASA, and also area educational leaders and students. And you are heading up the Makers event. Is that right, Mary Elizabeth? What many of our listeners will not be familiar with that term, Makers event. What does that mean,
so
anyway?
So the funniest part of this Makers event for me is I never knew what a Makers event was, because my life kind of has always been one, and I didn't realize that other people do that. Basically, a Makers event is where a bunch of people come together and share their minds and share their talents in different fields to build or make something. My particular Makers event last time, we built the Viking lander, which was the very first lander to land on the planet Mars in 1976.
And you built it out of spare parts? And
we built it out of all kinds of... One of the pieces was a helium tank cut in half. Another piece was a 1980s hair dresser's dryer that would, the big bubbly thing. Little electrodes. We have hydraulics with little tiny motors. And any comfort level or ability level is welcome. There's a station where little kids can just tear stuff apart. The whole concept of the build for me is to think outside the box in just about everything you do. When you come into the maker space that I create, little kids are welcome to tear apart a toaster, to tear apart parts of an electron microscope that I'll bring, things that they've never seen or everyday items they have. And they learn to tinker and they learn to think outside the box. And when you put people who don't know much about this thing but do know a lot about that thing together, and you create something, you're creating a fellowship and a community, as well as, in this case, a purpose. And for this year's build, we are going to build houses on the planet Mars. When you come into the build, we'll ask you, we'll give you a notebook card, and it'll say, like, the question you need to answer is, what three things would you take to Mars? So it'll make you stop and think a minute. If I was leaving for the planet Mars, what three things would I take? The amount of questions that rush into your brain after that. How long am I staying? Will they have electricity? Will I get hungry? Like, what do you mean? Just three things. And that's part of learning. So they answer those three questions. I take those cards, because those cards are so valuable, because that'll make grown-ups and other people think, oh, I never thought about taking this thing and how important that thing would be. So the more information in different ways that we collect. So that's kind of where we're stealing information on the build, and where we're using that. That's our data collection. But then to see what happens, the culminating activity, mind you, would be they come into the space, there's all these parts and all these things, now build a house. And so far, one of my volunteers works for Carnegie Science Center, and I said to her, as one of my main engineers, what kind of items do you want for this build? And she said, hinges. I want lots of hinges. And I said, okay, we'll have hinges and bicycle tires. And right now we have the binoculars that go inside an electron microscope and a lot of staging from machinery. And as they build and as they create, maybe something doesn't work. But part of learning is making those mistakes so that you can go back. And part of the awesomeness of this build is putting different people together. I have one person, he's got a very engineer mind, and he'll be sitting in the corner with pen and paper saying, hey, that didn't work. Why don't you come over here and we'll redesign it.
Where is your space going to be exactly? Do you know?
Next to the post office in downtown Mars. Mm-hmm. Bill Hart, the owner of Fire Alliance. It's the building right beside the post office, is gracious enough to let me take over his building so that I can have this space.
Now, will this be 2 days, 3 days? When?
Saturday and Sunday will be mine.
Okay, 2 days. And is there, an admission? Is there a charge for?
No, you just have to sign a waiver saying that you won't sue me if you get a cut or a scrape, and that I can take your photo so that I can promote more things and I don't get in trouble.
You also head up a 4-H club, right?
That
deals with this exact thing you've been talking about.
Yes. Because there was so much interest in the Mars New Year, I have 2 degrees in teaching, and I'm very passionate about science and math in my teaching. I'm also a Slippery Rock graduate, as your next guest who went to Antarctica. It's a great school. And there was so much interest that a lot of people were asking me to do things. So I am a 4-H member. My children are, for what most people think 4-H is, farming. But there's a whole other division of 4-H that's science and technology and air, land, sea, drones, robotics, and working together. So they asked me, hey, do you want to just start a STEAM club? And I was like, absolutely. And STEAM stands for science, technology, engineering, art, and math. So I'm most comfortable in art because that's my natural flow. But the science and the math, I'm fairly well schooled in. Engineering and technology is where I try to get as many of my volunteers as I can. I'm not quite wired that way, but I'm a great facilitator of getting those people where they need to be and the resources they need to make the house look amazing.
We are chatting today on this segment of the program with Mary Elizabeth Snow, who has a business. Her business is known as The Girl on the Hill, and it's a junkyard. That's what it is, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Girl on the Hill. And you're right outside of Mars, is that right?
Right outside the borough. I liked my slogan is, we sell empty space. The space where you keep all your Hordak and treasures is way more valuable empty to you than it is full.
Do you, as part of your business, do you go to people's places and empty them?
Yes. I've actually been doing it for many, many years. It's one of the ways I paid my way through college, was emptying attics, basements, and garages. I've worked for big companies like Gojo and Rubbermaid to empty out giant warehouses all the way down to smaller, little, grandma needs help getting a mattress out of the back bedroom kind of thing, to full workshops. Somebody's dad passed away and they live in Arizona. Mm-hmm. They call me and I try to save the family treasures for them. I try to have a good eye for that and get good photographs or heirlooms back. But the rest I take, and I try to find really good use for it in the community altogether.
Repurpose it, right?
Repurpose, reuse, but I try to do it in a way that it gets to the people who might not have their resources on their own. I'm very well plugged in with a community of single moms and small grassroots organizations like Mission for Mars that goes and takes food downtown to homeless people every week. They will call me sometimes and say, hey, Mary, we need a couch at so-and-so's house. Okay.
Now, you showed me some pictures on your phone of generators, electric generators, yeah, that you have come up with from somewhere, and then you've had artists come in and paint them to look like, I don't know. They look like something from Star Wars or something, like robots from Star Wars.
Yeah.
And there are several of them.
I think they look like minions. That's when I saw them without paint on them, I said, "Oh my goodness. These are Mary's Mars minions."
So okay, so minions. Excited. I was thinking of was it R2-D2?
Yes,
from
it would be R2-D2. Yes.
Yeah, it looks kind of like what later would be a minion many, many years later.
So, I work for a company that they refurbish electron microscopes. And there's a lot of waste material in that. There's a lot of things that they can't, that it's too old, it is obsolete. There's a lot of things that mainly they're just obsolete. Technology mm-hmm. is a huge part of my maker's builds and my explanation. Nothing makes me laugh harder than when someone in the business calls me for the girl on the hill and says, "I have a TV, but it works." Well, that's great. It weighs 600 pounds and takes up 45 cubic feet. No one wants your work in TV. Well, that trickle-down effect of how much advancements in technology goes is a trickle-up effect as well. You don't need as much storage room. It's way easier to produce electricity, or you just don't even need that whatsoever. I do the lesson with my STEAM club using records. We make a fundraising project where we melt records to make shapes that
You're talking about LPs?
Yes, I'm talking about 45, 78s, and 33s.
Old vinyl records.
Yes. So what do people do with those old vinyl records? 9 times out of 10, they end up in a dumpster is what really happens. There's a few, yes, that go on your wall and look beautiful, but only to those who really appreciate those particular ones. Mm-hmm. So in records, which is a microcosm of technology, you take a 33, that means it takes 33 and a third revelations per minute to play that sound. Same with the 78 and the 45.
Mm-hmm.
So you teach kids that that's the way we used to play music and how much energy is needed to generate that. And how much energy do you need to generate your MP3 player? Your finger. Like none. That is why so much is obsolete. Well, it goes all the way up to industry. The things that you speak of that I made into robots with artists, you know, they're obsolete. They don't need that size anymore, that capacity maker. There's a much more efficient way to take it, or we even use a different source of energy now. So they're obsolete. Well, what do they do with them? You could melt them down and scrap them, or you could give them to Mary, and she could make some sweet, sweet artwork.
We'll take a quick break, talk a little bit more with Mary Elizabeth Snow, and we'll continue with our It's Your Turn program here for a Wednesday in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. Hey, it's planting time, right? Yeah. A lot of folks putting out their vegetable plants over the past week or so, or maybe you're putting them out in the next couple of days. Think about setting aside a few plants for the Society of St. Vincent de Paul and the Food Cupboard. They've been doing a program for quite a few years now, asking people to put in an extra plant or two, or maybe if you've already planted your tomatoes or your peppers or your beans or whatever, say, okay, the last two in this row, or whatever fruit or produce I get from these goes to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Cupboard. And they'll announce collection times a little bit later when we get close to harvesting, probably in July. But think about it, huh? It's been a very successful program, and it's been a marvel for the folks who depend on the food cupboard of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. Fresh produce. I mean, it's terrific for these needy families. So think about it. Whenever they start their pickups, the weekly pickups of excess produce, we'll tell you all about it coming up in July. Society of St. Vincent de Paul. They like to say we stand tallest when we stoop to help others. We're chatting on this segment of It's Your Turn with Mary Elizabeth Snow. She is a businesswoman in the Mars area. She has a junkyard. She owns a junkyard. The girl on the hill. And as we mentioned a few moments ago, as part of her business, she she empties out places. if you're in that particular situation where you need something emptied out, a house or a garage or a barn or whatever, talk to Mary Elizabeth. She can do it. But she's also putting on in her space at this weekend's Mars Exploration Celebration, a makers event. Is this just for kids to come into your space?
Oh, no.
Okay, anybody, any age?
If you like to tinker and you want to use your imagination, you are welcome to come in this space. We are more than excited to... There are tools and there are things, and we have produced a pretty safe learning environment, and there's a lot of different things you can do. If you have a son or a daughter or a grandkid and you want to give them the introduction to how to take apart a toaster, come in our space. There's a nice little place for you to sit down with them and start tinkering it apart. And then once those parts are apart, you can put them in our bin of taking apart parts, and somebody else can use those to build something. Maybe you want to do the building part, not the tearing apart part. In my particular makerspace, I like to try to think of all kids, with young and old, with all abilities. My favorite people are the grandfathers who are garage tinklers with their coffee cans and glass jars and cat litter boxes full of gears, knobs, buttons, saving it from 1960, whatever, back when they drove a 1942 red Cadillac that they got off their Uncle Merle. Those things.
It's a great feature story on Mary Elizabeth in the In Mars Area magazine. This is the summer events guide, right? So this is the summer issue. A nice picture in there and a nice program. And, of course, you, I'm sure, will always welcome new members to your 4-H STEAM Club.
Absolutely. If you want to look, if you look it up on Facebook, it's Mars Space Pioneers 4-H STEAM.
This is just one part. It's a big part, obviously, as Mary Elizabeth has explained. One part of the huge celebration coming up this weekend, 3 days in Mars, open to the public. Everybody's welcome. Come in, have a good time. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the Mars Exploration Celebration in Mars Borough. Speakers, exhibits, STEAM education activities, as we just mentioned. And by the way, there'll be plenty of food and music as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's and lots of hands-on game for kids as well.
Big time to come to Mars. And it won't take you as long to get there as it would to get to the planet Mars either.
That's
which
right.
is like
it's 35 million miles away.
I think it takes 2 years to get to Mars, doesn't it?
It depends.
Depends on how you go.
We use a lot of, basically, it's like drifting and back drag technology where we catch like a drift from a planet.
Yeah.
And I believe the shortest that they've made it is 10 months.
10 months?
Is the shortest. I believe, but I am not a scientist, and there are a lot of numbers that float around in my head.
Well, Mary Elizabeth, what a delight to meet you. I'm so glad you could come in today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being invited.
Yeah, nice to meet you indeed. Hey, we'll take a break. Our next guest will be with us. She is also a graduate of Slippery Rock University, an alumna, just as Mary Elizabeth is. And she's just been to Antarctica. Yeah. Her name is Mariana Miles, and we will meet her and talk with her about her trip. She's a grad student now, but recent graduate of SRU. That's coming up in just a couple of minutes here on the next segment of It's Your Turn. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Thinking about remodeling or refinancing your home? ARMCO Credit Union's new HELOC combines the flexibility of a traditional home equity line of credit with the low fixed rate of a home equity loan. Lock in different amounts, rates, and terms up to 20 years under one convenient loan agreement and monthly payment without the hassle of reapplying as your borrowing needs change. It's never been easier to join, so call or visit us at one of our locations or online at armcocu.com to become a member.
ARMCO Credit Union is an equal housing lender and federally insured by NCUA.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but but necessary, and the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back, good friends. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program. And how nice to meet our next guest who joins us by telephone today. She is Marina Miles, a graduate of Slippery Rock University, who not too long ago spent time in, of all places, Antarctica. Marina, nice to meet you. Thanks for taking a few minutes to be able to chat with us here today.
Sure, not a problem.
When were you in Antarctica, Marina?
I was there the end of this past December through the beginning of February. I actually flew out of Bangor on Christmas Eve.
So you made this trip as part of your graduate studies?
Yes, this is for my master's thesis at the University of Maine.
So you graduated from Slippery Rock University, and now you're in Maine, huh?
Yep.
So are you studying anything in particular? What was it that sent you to Antarctica for a few months?
We're studying glaciers in the dry valleys of Antarctica. It's about an hour helicopter ride from McMurdo Station, which is south, just due south of New Zealand. So we're studying the glaciers and how they have responded to temperature changes in the past.
I will mention to our listeners that we're reaching Marina by cell phone, and it's not the best connection that we've had, but I'm hoping that you can hear us okay. Sounds a little bit like we're talking to her in Antarctica, but that's not the case. By the way, Marina, you grew up in Butler, did you not?
Yes, I did, just north of Butler, between Route 38 and Route 68.
Mm-hmm. And did you go to Butler Area High School, Marina?
I did up until ninth grade, and I switched to PA Cyber at that time and took classes at BC3 instead.
Mm-hmm. And then it was off to Slippery Rock, or did you go somewhere else?
I actually went to IUP and got a degree in fine arts in sculpture. I did that and then worked at the aviary for 2 years before going to Slippery Rock University for a geology degree.
Well, that's quite a combination. You already have a degree in fine art and sculpture, and then you decide to get a degree in geology. Any relation there, or is it just happenstance?
Well, towards the end of my time at IUP, I started making sculptures that were more related to the environment.
I see.
And while I was at the aviary, I was surrounded by scientists and knew that that was the path I wanted to pursue. Also, I think the glaciers are kind of like a sculptors of landscape, so they really do go together quite well.
Indeed. I see the connection now that you mention it, yes. By the way, how in the heck do you get to Antarctica? There must be a series of flights that you must take, stopping in a number of locations. Can you detail that for us? How do you get to Antarctica?
Oh, sure. It's quite a trip. I started in Bangor and took a flight from Bangor to Newark, New Jersey, and then from Newark out to L.A. And then from there, it was a really long flight from L.A. to Christchurch, New Zealand. On the way out, it was great because it was bedtime. So you just slept on the flight, and that was it. On the way back, not so much because it was during the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then from Christchurch, New Zealand, we took a military cargo plane down to McMurdo Station in Antarctica.
Wow. That is that's a roundabout trip, isn't it? Wow.
Oh, yes, it is. And from McMurdo, we took helicopters out into the field where we stayed at our camp.
What was it like in camp? Is it a large encampment, or was it just a couple of outbuildings, or what?
So we stayed in tents. We had two sleep tents, which are, they're 10 by 10 or 12 by 12. I think it's 10 by 10. They're pretty small.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of those would have two people sleeping in it. And then we had, it's called an endurance tent. It looks like a large caterpillar. And that was our cook tent, where we would hang out and write and cook and everything.
Somehow, I just can't picture staying in a tent in Antarctica. These must have been very strong tents. How the heck did you keep warm?
The tents have been in use for quite a long time. They were used on Scott's expedition to Antarctica in the early 1900s, and they're based on a teepee design. So they do really well in the wind, actually. They don't stay very warm, though, unfortunately. But we had really great sleeping bags and sleeping ground pads that kept us warm. And then in the cook tent, we would keep the stove on to keep us warm while we were sitting in there. So we stayed warm enough.
So, is it comparable in terms of daylight and darkness to what happens at the North Pole, or, you know, above the Arctic Circle, the land of the midnight sun? Is there a similar thing that happens in reverse in Antarctica?
Yes. It was 24-hour sunlight while we were there.
Yeah, you were there from late December to late February, so that would have been winter time for us, and it would have been summertime in the southern hemisphere, so it never got dark while you were there, huh?
Nope, not at all.
Wow. What about temperatures? Does it warm up in what passes for summer in Antarctica? What was the average temperature the couple of months that you were there?
Yes, it was the middle of summer down there, which means it was probably between 15 and maybe 30 degrees at the maximum. I didn't have a thermometer on me at all times, but when you're hiking around with a backpack full of rocks, it gets a lot warmer than it actually is. So
you were...
It never got too cold.
You were studying glaciers. I thought Antarctica was one big glacier. That's not the case, Marina.
It kind of is one big glacier with little outlet glaciers. It's one big ice cap with glaciers that kind of drain out of it.
Mm-hmm.
We were studying some of those smaller glaciers.
Unlike the North Pole, which is just ice, there is actually land, though, under the ice in Antarctica. Am I correct on that?
Yes, you are. It's a continent.
And how far down do you have to go through the ice before you get to land?
In some places, it's a long way. It's probably over 1,000 meters or more. Where we were at, though, we were lucky. It's called the Dry Valleys region of Antarctica, and the wind blows in such a way to keep it ice-free. So while we were camping on solid ground and not on ice.
Oh, wow. So how far did you have to go to get to a glacier, or did you actually do that?
So we were camped near the glaciers. They were not very far away from us, maybe a five-minute stroll.
Oh.
We're looking at the deposits that they leave behind. So in the valleys where there's no longer any ice, there are like the footprints that the glaciers have left in the past, and those are what we go out and study.
Oh, my. So that would be very much analogous to what we have at Moraine State Park. Am I correct on that?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. In fact, the name of Moraine State Park comes from moraine, the remnants that the glacier from the last ice age left behind, right?
Yes, exactly. It goes through the western portion of Moraine State Park.
So our glaciers are long gone, but the glaciers in Antarctica are deteriorating and melting away. Is that generally what you were studying while you were down there, Marina?
Yes, they're there. They're making moraines at the moment. We're studying the differences between the glaciers that end on the land versus the ones that end in the ocean. And the ones that end in the ocean are currently retreating, whereas the ones that end on land are currently slightly advancing since there are warmer temperatures. That means that the air is warmer, and so there's more precipitation and therefore more snow getting added to these. And it doesn't really warm up a whole lot during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So, but these are just tiny glaciers compared to the rest of the Antarctic ice sheet.
I have never been to Alaska, but I have some friends who have taken that cruise, you know, that goes up from Seattle or Vancouver up, and they have seen glaciers calve. In other words, they get to the edge of the sea and pieces of them break off. Does that happen in Antarctica as well, Marina?
Yes, it does. And it usually happens in the middle of the night when you're trying to sleep. And it sounds like a giant explosion. yeah, huge pieces of ice will fall off the side of the glacier. And it'll wake you right up.
I was going to say, that'd be pretty spooky, at least the first few times that you heard it, huh?
Oh, yeah.
I've also read, and I'm not very well read on Antarctica. I've read a little bit. There's some concern that not just glaciers are calving and you get pieces falling into the sea, but aren't there whole pieces of the ice shelf that are breaking up? I'm talking about gargantuan pieces.
Yes, there are. So the ice shelves kind of act as a cork for all of these outlet glaciers of the Antarctic ice sheet.
Uh-huh.
So once these ice shelves keep, once they start breaking up, then it allows the glaciers to flow more and reduce the volume of ice. There are other researchers who are working on those ice shelves.
So you were studying how the ice has advanced and retreated in the past, and then on the basis of your study, you're able to predict, at least try to predict, how it will behave in the future. Is that right?
Yes, that is the goal. We want to see which directions it was flowing and where the ice was coming from when it was flowing, what routes it took, and what was feeding it.
So how do you do that when you were out on your daily studies while you were there? Do you pick up samples of rocks, or do you drill down, or what do you do?
So we go to the moraines that are out there, and those moraines were deposited when the ice was at that extent. And there are boulders on top of these moraines that were deposited by the ice, and they're picked up in the mountains and brought down by the glaciers and then deposited on these moraines. And once they were open to the atmosphere, they were bombarded with these cosmic rays, and they started producing beryllium within the rocks, which is kind of like a ticking clock. So we can sample these rocks and know the age of how long they have been sitting out. And combined with mapping of all these different features, we can get an estimate of where the ice was and how it moved and all of that stuff.
What develops within the rocks? What was the beryllium, did you say?
Yes, beryllium. It reacts with the quartz in the rock. The cosmic rays react with the quartz in the rock to start producing beryllium. Like tiny little amounts, but it's enough to leave behind a mark that we can trace and assign an age to it.
Do you have meters or electron microscopes, or how do you measure that?
So we take the samples back to the University of Maine, where we crush them up and dissolve them, and then we send them to a mass spectrometer out in California that measures the amount of beryllium in them. And by measuring the amount, we can get the date.
My, my. How many people were on this trip? We're talking, listeners, if you joined us a little bit late here, we're talking with Marina Miles. She's a Butler native, grew up in Butler, went to school at BC3, at IUP, and at SRU, and she's now doing graduate work. In fact, she's a graduate research assistant at the School of Earth and Climate Scientists at the University of Maine. Is that right in Bangor, Maine, Marina?
It's just north of Bangor, about 10 minutes. It's in Orono, Maine.
I see. Direct me to Bangor from Portland. I've been in Portland and then a little bit further north of that to the big state park, but never any further. How much further is it to Bangor?
From Portland to Bangor is about 2 hours, just straight up 95 north. And then from Acadia, we're about maybe an hour or so northwest.
I see. And how did you end up at the University of Maine? Is that School of Earth and Climate Scientists well known for what you wanted to study?
Yes, my supervisor, Brenda Hall, has been going to the Antarctic for 29 years now. So they've done quite a bit of research in Antarctica in glacial geology, which is what I wanted to pursue.
How many other researchers were with you on the trip that you made back in December?
So there were four of us total. It was Dr. Brenda Hall, my supervisor, Tess Walther, who is my office mate and fellow graduate student, and Laura Mattis, who's an undergraduate student, and this was her second trip to Antarctica.
We'll take a quick break. This is fascinating discussion, folks. We're chatting with Marina Miles about a recent research trip that she made to Antarctica. It's about as far south as you can go. That's for sure. A couple of messages, and we'll be back to chat a little bit more with Marina here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
$3. Not too much $3 can buy these days. Not even a gallon of gas. Fortunately, with the Butler Transit Authority, $3 provides you with all-day transportation with over 250 local Butler bus stops. Butler Transit can get you to all the major Butler shopping destinations, medical facilities, downtown, and much more. Visit our downtown bus terminal on West Newcastle Street or on the web at butlertransit.com.
Thinking about remodeling or refinancing your home? ARMCO Credit Union's new HELOC combines the flexibility of a traditional home equity line of credit with the low fixed rate of a home equity loan. Lock in different amounts, rates, and terms up to 20 years under one convenient loan agreement and monthly payment without the hassle of reapplying as your borrowing needs change. It's never been easier to join, so call or visit us at one of our locations or online at armcocu.com to become a member.
ARMCO Credit Union is an equal housing lender and federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome back. We're chatting with Marina Miles, who is currently a graduate research assistant at the University of Maine, a graduate of Slippery Rock University. And she was in Antarctica for about 2 months, from late December to late February of this year, studying the history of glaciers in Antarctica. I'm fascinated, Marina, as to what a typical day might have been like while you were in Antarctica. You said it never got dark because it was the land of the midnight sun. Did you still get up at a regular hour? Was it difficult to fall asleep when it was still daylight, or how did that work?
So it's not very difficult to fall asleep when you're hiking around all day with a backpack full of rocks. But every day we would wake up around at 6:30 or 7 o'clock. We had to call in to the station of McMurdo via our satellite phone and let them know that everything was all right. And we would eat breakfast, have coffee, load up our packs with empty sample bags, and start hiking. And we would follow the moraines and take samples wherever we would find good samples, and around three or four in the afternoon, start heading back and cook dinner. Dinner was always great. We had a cooler full of frozen meats and vegetables, so we ate quite a bit of good food. And then head to bed and wake up and do it all again.
So are the moraines where you were researching, were they mounds or were they ridges? Were they large? Were they small?
So they're ridges, and they're pretty small in Antarctica. The glaciers there have cold bottoms that don't erode as much material as, say, the Laurentide ice sheet that was in Slippery Rock was eroding and depositing. So these mounds could be, I don't know, 3 meters tall or so, or taller, maybe 10 meters at their max. We would go out and follow them and try to track them as far as we could. We could map them.
Were they all rocks or some dirt in there, or what were they made up of?
Yeah, so it's a mix. The glaciers erode everything from really fine silt to large car-sized boulders. So it's just it's called a diamictyon. It's a mix of every grain size you can think of.
My next question is probably going to be pretty silly, but I'm not afraid of asking silly questions. I know that the terminal moraine here in Butler County, from which we get the name Moraine State Park and so on, deposited some unusual flowers and seeds that we see growing in the Jennings Environmental Education Center, seeds that were actually brought down by the glacier. That didn't happen in Antarctica, right? I mean, it's too cold to have anything growing down there, isn't it?
Yes, there are no plants growing where we were at. Oh, well, however, there is algae. And we were also sampling algae that was deposited in these moraines. As the ice would heat up a little bit during the summer, these meltwater streams would flow off of the surface of the glacier and run alongside it, and these little streams. And that provided a great place for algae to start growing. And as the glacier deposited more sediment on top of it, these algae mats got covered in sediment. And then once the glacier retreated and there's no more water flowing over them, they freeze-dried. So we take samples of freeze-dried algae. It can be up to like 8,000 years old or so.
Wow. Are there any fossils in Antarctica?
Yes, there are. In the mountains that are behind where we were doing our research, there are large deposits of plant life. I'm not very familiar with the paleontology of Antarctica, but I do know that there are areas that are really well known for their fossils of plants.
I've been in some faraway places where it felt like I was the only person in the world, but I can't imagine what it must have been like to step outside your tent and do a 360 in Antarctica. You must have felt like you couldn't possibly have been any further from home.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. It was interesting to walk on surfaces that maybe nobody has ever walked on before. God, it was just really neat to think about.
Did you stay in camp the whole time you were there, or did you go back to McMurdo once in a while? How did that happen?
So we stayed in camp. We had 3 separate camps, so each one we stayed at for around 10 days or so. And then at the end of the 10 days, a helicopter would come out, and we'd pack up all of our tents and gear, and they would pick it up in a sling load and move it to the next valley where our camp would be, and we'd stay there. But we never went back to McMurdo until the end of our field season.
Did they bring in food and medical supplies and stuff by helicopter to you?
So when the helicopters would come for us to move camp, we would give them boxes of samples, and they would give us boxes of groceries, pretty much.
Did you have any sort of a permanent staff there, or was it up to you, the researchers, your research team, to do all the cooking and everything?
Right, it was just the 4 of us out in the field, so we rotated cooking duties. We would have somebody doing the cook duties and somebody else calling into McMurdo in the morning, and somebody else lighting the stove in the morning to keep the tent warm.
Probably not great cell service there, right? You couldn't get your cell phones would not work, huh?
Oh, not at all. We had a satellite phone, but we tried to limit its usage. We'd call home once a week or so because we used a generator to charge it. Didn't want to run out of fuel or anything, so we just kept our calls short.
Your generator and your cook stove, what kind of fuel did they run on? Propane?
So the cook stove ran on white gas. It was one of the Coleman white gas stoves that you can get anywhere. And then our generator, I'm pretty sure it was diesel. It was only used a handful of times, though.
Will you go back to Antarctica, Marina, or was it one and done?
I would really love to go back one day. We did apply for a grant this year, but funding fell through. There's lots of other projects going on, and I don't think that they have the helicopter support to support us. But maybe down the road for a PhD, I might be able to get back.
How long until you finish your master's at the University of Maine?
Well, hopefully I should be finished this time next year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and one more year.
And then perhaps on to a doctorate?
That is the goal, yes. I'd like to become a professor eventually. I've had some really great professors along the way, like Dr. Burkhardt at Slippery Rock University, and I'd like to follow in their shoes and help give others the opportunities that I've been given as a student.
Did you have any other teachers, maybe even younger, who gave you a spark to embark on your amazing career?
Well, my mother taught environmental science at a camp just outside of Butler.
Uh-huh.
So she was a teacher as well, and I think that might have worn off on me a little bit.
Wow. Well, your family must be extremely proud of you. And I certainly thank you for being able to take a few minutes to chat with us today. Are you in Maine right now? Is that where we're reaching you?
Yep, in Bangor, Maine. That's probably why the connection's not great. Sorry.
We have had torrential rains here in western Pennsylvania last night, an incredible amount of rain. Sarver, obviously you know where Sarver is, 4.65 inches of rain yesterday evening in Sarver. Over 4.5 inches. Yeah,
got to be a record.
I would think. Adams Township, over 3 inches of rain. So we've had a real mess here, and we're keeping our fingers crossed because there's a possibility that we may get a repeat today. So you're probably lucky you're in Maine today.
Yeah, well, it's rainy here too, just not as much of a downpour.
Irina, nice to meet you. We appreciate the time today. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Okay, thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Long-distance call there, and we do apologize. It wasn't the best of connections. It wasn't bad. It wasn't the best of connections with Irina. What an interesting person, huh? And what an interesting career. Even though she's still studying, obviously, she hopes to be a professor someday. In a few years, studying the history of glaciers in Antarctica. It takes a special person to be able to. Could you go to Antarctica? I don't know. I don't think that I could. No, I don't think. It's a long ways down there. Where did she go? From Bangor to Newark, New Jersey, to Los Angeles, to New Zealand, and then to Antarctica. Probably took a couple of days. Well, it would have to. She crossed the date lines. It would have been a different day. Well, nice to have her with us on the program today. We thank our earlier guest as well, and it was nice to meet her for the first time, Mary Elizabeth Snow, sharing information about the big Mars exploration celebration that's happening this weekend, 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Mars. Boy, there's going to be a lot going on down there. So if you're looking for something to do this weekend, that's where you want to go. NASA speakers, exhibits, STEAM education activities, food, music, and more, all in downtown Mars this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And there's lots of activities for kids and for adults. All kind of stuff going on down there in Mars. Okay, I think that just about wraps it up on the program for today. Hope you enjoyed. I certainly enjoyed chatting with our guest today, and we hope that you can be with us tomorrow on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn, weekdays, 12:30, here on WISR. I'm Dave Malarkey. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Pittsburgh Pirates are in a rain delay, but we're going to join the broadcast already in progress.
She shine with her own kind of light. She look at you once in a day. That's all wrong, looks all right. And I love her. God knows I love her. Kentucky woman, she get to know you. She got to own you. Kentucky woman. Ain't the kind make heads turn at the drop of her name. But something inside that she's got turns you on just the same. And she loves me. God knows she loves me. Kentucky woman, she get to know you. She got to own you. Kentucky woman. Don't want much. Good Lord's have beneath my feet. Gentle touch from that one girl and life is.